Hey everyone, I know you've heard me speak about microdosing and how much I love it. And I'm talking about microdosing THC. I love it. And that's why I love our sponsor, microdose.com. Microdose gummies are incredible. They deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. And when I mean just the right amount of good, I mean in so many situations. Anxiety, sleep, focus, pain, relaxation. There are so many different strains and they're really helpful. And I have recommended microdose.com to so many people. And you know what they say to me? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Don't be afraid of microdosing. Go to microdose.com and you'll learn all about microdosing THC. These gummies feel amazing. They taste amazing. I have used them to get me into the zone I need to write. I've used them at night after a stressful day or a stressful show to relax. I have also said to family members, please take a gummy right now. And they've said, oh, good idea. So check it out. Check it out because they're fantastic. And I'm not like a big weed person. I mean, I used to be. And I do enjoy weed every now and then. But I love these gummies. And I take them with me everywhere. So check it out. Don't be afraid. They're all natural. They're fantastic. And you deserve it. So what are you going to do? You're going to do something that is fantastic. You're going to get 30% off your first order. 30% off. That's a lot. Plus free shipping today at microdose.com. Use promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD. It's available nationwide. They deliver it to your door. That is microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD for 30% off and free shipping. Do it. Go to microdose.com. Promo code JUDYGOLD. You deserve it. You deserve it. And you know what else? You're welcome.
Tropfen regn auf mein Kopf. Hink wie ein Deckel, muss es die kleine Farbe im Kopf. Geht mir kein Sach mit, die Tropfen.
Hey everyone, it's Judy Gold, and you're listening to Kill Me Now with Judy Gold. And I'm the host, because it's called Kill Me Now with Judy Gold, and I'm Judy Gold. Anyway, so excited that you're here. I'm excited for part one of my interview with Jackie Cation. But I just want to let you know that before we begin, I have some dates on the books, and you need to come see me. I'm going to be in Aruba, December, I guess it would be the 13th. 15th and 17th. Those are the days I'm doing shows, although on the days off, I will be doing other things. And on Christmas Day, I'll be at Stand Up New York in New York City, 7:30 show. And come see me in Carmel, Indiana. That's right, on January 15th, Carmel, Indiana at Feinstein's. And FYI, it'll be fucking freezing. So hope to see you live and in person. Thank you for listening and welcome to part one of my interview with Jackie Cation. Don't forget to listen to her new special, Stay Cation.
Ladies and gentlemen, you know, there's a sisterhood in comedy and stand-up. It's runs very deep, especially the female comics who all started about 30 plus years ago. I'd say 30 plus. I'm almost at 40. You're almost at 35, or you're at 35, I think. You're
84? Whatever.
Yeah. We never got to work together. So many of the women I interview, because they would only allow one woman on a show, we never got to work together unless it was a special event. And through the sisterhood of someone who you were hanging out with in New York or you knew from LA, you would sort of, it was like, we're cousins. You know, they're cousins that you never see. And that's what our guest is to me today. I think she's hilarious. She's a true, and you know how I believe in this, a true stand-up comedian for the art of stand-up comedy, not to get something else, not as a vehicle for something else. She's original. She's hilarious. Ladies and gentlemen, Jackie Cashin is here! Woo!
Oh my God, I couldn't feel more welcome. Holy smoke, I feel welcome.
Listen, Jackie, I want to do your podcast with Lori.
Oh, we don't have guests. Do you want to do my podcast where I have guests?
Yes, the Dork Podcast.
Yeah, where you talk about the thing you love.
Yes, and here's the thing.
What do you love? Airplanes? I'm going to guess do you
the fly Dork Forest. Planes?
Yes.
What do I love more than anything?
I love to guess, and literally, when I thought Judy Gold, I thought biplanes. You fly biplanes.
So not even fucking close.
I want you to fly a biplane. What do you love? It could be anything. It could be bees. It could be cross stitch. It could be astronauts. Yeah.
I guess films about the Holocaust was taken, I'm sure. But
trying for the will. In real time, please.
There's two things I love more than anything besides human beings. Swimming in the ocean.
Oh.
And music.
Right. Music is too big. You got to pick kinds of music.
Okay, I would say learning a piece on the piano.
Okay.
To the point where that accomplishment of learning a piece and just being able, and I don't play for other people, so I'd just be playing for my, you know, just going, wow, you know.
I got it. I could sit down and play this at any time. Is that
right,
what you're going
for? Right, for myself, yes.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about me, Jackie.
But I want to know about this. Swimming in the ocean, I'll ask one question.
Yes.
Where do you park?
Well, I'm in Provincetown right now.
Oh, are you?
Yes.
You know, I lived in Provincetown for 3 summers. If I would have stayed, it would have just been alcoholism. So I did not.
Wow. What summers were they?
88, 89, and 90.
So I bought this house in 94.
Wow. Okay.
And I started working here in 92.
Right. So I just missed you. And
you're right. There's a lot of drugs and alcohol here, especially during the wintertime.
There's just a choice. The meetings or the bars. Meetings or the bars.
A lot of meetings here, apparently. Okay. Also, it's funny because, you know, in the summer, you'll see these, you know, these drag performers and these characters. And then in the winter, you go to the Stop and Shop, and they're bagging groceries or you know.
Right, right. Is it still, like, I literally haven't been there since 92, I think. And I miss it with the power of the sun. Yeah. I miss it every year.
Right.
It's so beautiful. Is there still just the one grocery store? That's like an A&P?
Yeah, it was A&P. Then it was Grand Union.
Right. And now it's a Stop and Shop.
We called it the Goo, and now it's the Stop and Shit. Yeah.
I lived there. I worked on McMillan Wharf at a hot dog stand next to the surf club.
Yes.
I called it Hot Dog Heaven. And the guy who owned it also owned Geppetto's Pizza Place in Truro. And so I worked at the hot dog stand from, would have been June to September. And then I worked at the hot dog stand and the pizza place in the afternoon because it was only open in the morning.
Right.
And then the pizza place at night through September, October. And then I went to Europe with all the money I made.
A lot of people do that. They make all their money and then they leave. But wait, so you never performed here?
They would let me go up at the surf club on my birthday every year. And I was always so hammered that they were like, you're not good at stand-up. And the jug band played every night. And it was the hot dog stand. You couldn't start drinking until noon if you worked the window. But if you worked the grill, you could start at 9.
Wow.
And, yeah.
I just fuck it. And then did you live in Provincetown?
Yeah. Yeah. I lived on Front Street. The first year, we had a one bedroom apartment. There were five of us in a one bedroom apartment stacked like cordwood. And then the next year, somebody's mom owned like a beautiful condo that we lived in. And then the year after
was
that,
it a lesbian mom?
It wasn't. It was all the people that I know, weirdly, who lived and worked in Provincetown are straight. It was
okay,
very
we're
weird.
We're going to have to end this right now. Thank you.
It's been great. Leave.
It's been fun. Yeah, that's so
it
funny.
It was right. Like if
it's
I was
very
gonna,
yeah, there's a lot of straight people now since we got equality.
Started letting them in. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not good. Not good.
It was
not that I don't
thing.
Love my straight people, but yeah.
Well, my favorite thing to do with it was a foot-long hot dog stand, and the drunkest of all gay men would approach, and I would get to say every time, "Don't forget to put a condiment on that."
Condiment. Get it, people?
If I had a tiny bell, I would have rang it right after that.
Well, the bell is the Jew bell, and we haven't said anything remotely Jewish yet. Okay, so listen.
I could have been Jewish. My father sleeps around. It's a matriarchy.
Hey, okay. Now. So this question, and then I have to go back to my usual question.
Okay.
So you grew up in Wisconsin. We'll get to where and all that shit. And you went to University of Wisconsin-Madison, right? How did you end up in P-Town?
All of my friends from Madison, Wisconsin, we bought a car for $45.
What car?
We drove to P-Town. It was called Froggy. I don't know what the hell it was. We bought the tape deck inside.
And none of your friends were lesbies?
No, but one of my friends is fancy New York, Jewish, and they owned a house in Truro.
Wow. A lot of Jews go to Wisco.
Yeah, she was, Jenny Bergman. She, sure. And she, her parents had a house in Truro and they, and so she was like, "You guys, we can get jobs. We can all live on stacked on top of each other. My parents won't let us live in their house." And, so we all shared this.
It's the best place to be at that age.
Yeah. At 22.
At that time. And at that time, because but then the AIDS crisis hit really bad. Okay. So, Jackie, you were born in 1969, which
65.
Means...
65. Sorry. Yeah. I know.
I don't know why I had 69 written down there, but yes, I knew it was 65. I knew it was 65 because I read it. In South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, you said it was a factory town, okay?
Yep.
And it's not the same as regular Milwaukee. It's completely fucking different.
We have our own water treatment plant, which here in these troubled times, you're going to want in your own little town right there.
Especially in Flint. So your father, Elliot.
Elliot Cation. No middle name.
My father didn't have a middle name either.
Right.
Harold Gold. You were brought up by your stepmother, Nancy. You are the youngest of six. Terry, Philip, Scott, Russell, and Darla. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. Yes, indeed. When you have a podcast, people fill in a lot of extraneous information into the Wikipedia where you're like, "You don't need to know my stepmother's name." But there you go. She's
dead
now.
I try not to go on Wikipedia. But
Who'd you call?
I listen to interviews. I read interviews. I watch your stand up. I visit you.
So much more work than I do in the Dork Forest or Jackie and Laurie. So
well,
thank
it's only
God.
Because, you know why? It's because I am so fascinated by people's stories and what, and not, you know, look, you're promoting your podcast and your new
album
special and your album, you know, Stay Cashin'.
Yes, you would certainly listen to an interview because I named it Staycation in the hopes that people would pronounce
Cashin.
Would pronounce my name right.
Right.
But I was introduced.
Staycation. And it's, I said Staycation, but the joke is Staycation, like vacation people.
That's
you
right.
Fucking idiots. So, your childhood, first of all, you're half Armenian, half Irish.
That's it.
You know, I have a lot of friends who are half Italian, half Irish. And, I think Armenian and I think that's a good combination because you're like ethnic-y, ethnic, and then
sure.
Potato.
Right. And then super, super pale. But yeah. Most of my four of my siblings are dark, and then my brother Scott and I are the lighter ones. We got the
really coloring. What does that mean? So
it
you're
means
more entitled.
We were told that we were found on the street. So we were six
children. Oh, I used to get that. Here's the thing. My brother and sister used to tell me I was adopted. Now, I'm 6'2", and I look exactly like my brother and my parents. And they were like, no, you were adopted. They were like, oh, that person's really tall. And it was like, you know, and I believed it. Like, I fucking believed it. Because when you're the youngest, like you, you fucking believe everything they say.
Absolutely.
Now, your parents, they met when they were 16 and 17 years old, correct?
Yes, truth.
They started dating. Your mother got pregnant.
Yep.
And your dad went into the Navy, became a medic, and was moved to the Marines. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you. They had six children in 10 years.
Yep.
Your poor mother.
I know it. I picture her in heaven, which is devoid of children.
Right. And you talk about, or you have talked about, that even though you were the youngest of these six kids, your mother was still a baby when she had you.
Yeah.
I mean, she was a baby when she had all of them, but...
Yeah, she was 26 when I was born.
Right.
And you have to have mercy for these people eventually.
So how old, she must have been, what, 17, 18 when her first child was born, or?
Yeah, I think it was 18.
Okay, I have a 20-year-old and a 25-year-old, and I don't want either of them, neither of them are ready to have children. And it's like, you think of the people of our generation, and you call yourself a Gen Xer a lot, and I feel like I'm a Gen Xer, but I'm the last year of baby boomer.
Yeah,
don't you think should be a Gen Xer?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think that the generational thing is complete and utter bullshit.
Right.
Remember that book Generations was the one that kind of defined it, and then that guy wrote the book The Greatest Generation.
Yes, the great. Yeah, I've heard you talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's dumb. But I mean, I just think that.
And who the fuck said your generation is the greatest fucking generation? You fucking asshole.
Right. My brother Russ used to make a joke about it. He was like we all wouldn't have fought the Nazis. And then here we are. Here we are with an opportunity to fight the Nazis.
Fight them again. Yeah. Isn't that great? Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Hey, everybody. If you know me, you know I love my liquid IV, and I love giving it to people and telling people about it. And it's part of my everyday life. I keep hydrated with liquid IV. I put it in my water bottle. Well, I have this one water bottle that I use only for liquid IV. And I put lots of ice in it and cold water because I like it very cold. And it keeps me hydrated and it's delicious. So thank you, Liquid IV. And I have to tell you, I've now given it to my son's girlfriend because, you know, they go out partying. You know what I'm talking about. And it has helped her immensely with her dehydration, that it's great for those nights where you know you're going to be having a few drinks. It's delicious. It comes in pear, white peach, grape, lemon lime. Also, there's a lemon ginger one that is great that has a little caffeine. I just love Liquid IV. And you need to keep hydrated. It's very important. It affects you on so many levels. So do yourself a favor. Keep hydrated in the best way possible. Some people hydrate to live. Some people live to hydrate. I think I live to hydrate. Liquid IV quenches your thirst faster than water alone. It has three times the electrolytes of leading sports drinks, eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness. And this is true. They have a sugar-free stick. They have Liquid IV sugar-free that Elisa, my lover, loves. I don't use the sugar-free. Whatever. But it's also been great for my traveling because I get very dehydrated on my airplane flights. So please, you've heard me say this multiple times. Go get your Liquid IV. You have to keep hydrated. It's very important. So however you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco, or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, J-U-D-Y-G-O-L-D, at liquidiv.com. You're welcome.
Your parents separated when you were four, correct?
Yep.
And then you ended up living with your mother in a three-bedroom. You and your sister, Darla, were in the living room area, correct? And then like the rest are, you're in this three-bedroom apartment, six kids and your mother, who's not functioning correctly.
She's tired. She's very,
she's
very
tired. Six kids. I mean, can you fucking imagine you're 30 years old and you have six kids in a, I mean, I don't know how the fucking, what's that, what's her name? Suleiman with the fucking 87 kids.
Right. My mom was working at a place called Lloyd's Lunch, which was this diner in South Milwaukee. And she would have these jobs that were weird. Like she worked at the neon, we have a neon sign factory in South Milwaukee. And she worked at that factory for a while. And then she worked at the at Lloyd's Lunch for a while. And it was just brutal. So I think she was just grinding it out. And she wasn't good with money. Huge shocker. Your money skills aren't great when you start being given a check when you're 18 going, all right, you take care of all this. I'm gonna go to work.
Right.
And my dad, he just did what his dad had done, which was give his check to my grandfather gave
his check. But that's so that generation. Yeah.
And my grandmother was 40 when my dad was born.
Oh, my mother was 41. Yeah.
Yeah. So she knew how to, and she had lived through the genocide.
Right.
And she knew how to, she had a garden, right? I mean, she was recycling before recycling in the 40s. Come on. And but my mother, she was 18. She was 20. She was 25. And she would do these things where she didn't know, she would have a lot of money and then she would have no money. She was stuck with six kids alone. You know, my grandmother helped a little bit. The neighbors were kind of there, but mostly we just ran free. And she was like, I need a hobby. And so she started drinking. And then it was, they parted ways. And everyone's always surprised that we all turned out okay.
Right? I know. It's amazing. It's amazing when we'll get into it, but it's just really amazing how functioning you are. And your sister's like, you know, a badass, like chef and then like big into money and financial. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is she a lesbian, your sister?
My sister is a lesbian. Yes,
I knew it. I looked her up and I was like, if she's not a lesbian, her hair is. So love
as
you,
are her shoes. Darla?
I love you, Darla.
Yeah, and she works at RBC Dade Rauscher. She's a financial advisor. Socially, and she's on all these boards. She used to do like development for nonprofits.
Yes.
And then at one point she was like, what if I just become rich and just be on the boards? And
why didn't I think of that, Jackie?
Yeah.
Because I need fucking attention and I have to fucking do this shit. You know, I don't know if you think like this, but I always, there's so many people now. I just turned 59.
Happy birthday.
Thank you, Jackie. I know yours is in July and I'll wish it. but, you know, I don't know if you do this, but I look at these, there's so many people I know now who are at the end of their careers that they they chose, and are talented musicians who, you know, put that aside. They always wanted to be a chef, but they blah, blah, blah. And now they're doing it and they're rich and it's really fucking annoying. You know what I mean? And I look at them and I'm like, wait a minute. Wait, you're going to do stand-up comedy now? I fucking suffered like an asshole on the road for like how many fuck, and you're like rich and like, fuck you. It's so annoying.
Well.
Okay. You could be positive.
Right. Yeah. I was going to be positive and just go, what? I mean, here's what I would love for you is for you to play the piano publicly.
I would like that too. I mean, I do it in Better Things and I've always had, and my mother, oh, she wanted me to do that so badly. And my father.
Yeah.
But but I have to figure out a way to incorporate the two different sides of my personality. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, you get to be a whole person, Judy Gold.
No,
you get
to have I can't show the vulnerable,
you can.
Classical. Yes, I can. I mean, I got to figure it out because Zach Galifianakis figured it out. Anyway, but right. The point is that, yeah, so I have a little resentment for the people who were very responsible because
their whole
first
lives.
Of all, I was fighting it. You know, I'm a Jew. So it was like no one in my family went into showbiz. It was all, you know, doctor,
I'm a lawyer. Yeah.
CPA, actuary, insurance, blah. You know, you suffer. And I was like, no, I'm going to make it. And, you know, it's just.
I would argue that you have made it. Jackie. That you are very, very successful.
Thank you, Jackie.
That's what I would argue. And I would say this is Elliot Cation, when we were children, he said, you might as well try because I'm going to make fun of you in any case.
Right.
He's like, if you're successful, I'm going to like, hey, big shot. And if you're not successful, I'm like, well, you had to try. And I mean, he is the most optimistic dude. He is the weirdest relationship with money. That I've ever, like my entire family, it's because of his gambling. He literally thinks that money is something to be spent and then you go out and make more money. When I was like 14 or 15, he actually said to me, there will always be more money. And I said, how do you know that? And he said, because I have 6 kids and there has to be. I gotta go. And then, he is literally, you know, I used to do this bit about how he's a lot like radiation. We never saw him when we were kids, but he affected all of our lives. And so he's just a guy who's like, well, and he was there for my family financially.
It's interesting because you say you had no structure with your mother. Right. I'm curious as to her parents, where were they? What was their situation?
Well, they're, you know, Irish Catholic, and they had a lot of kids, and they hated my dad. And so my father is a big bridge burner. You know, they're just like my stepmother died. He was uninvited to the funeral. He was not allowed. And they had lived together like lesbians for about 12 years after they got divorced. They were married for like 25 years. My dad had an affair for 9 years. And you know what my dad had to say about it?
What?
Not 9 years in a row. And then they divorced. And they were divorced and they lived together for like another dozen years until Nancy Cation finally figured out how to get him out of the house, which was she started dating a guy. He calls me up. He's like, you know, she's dating Bob the window washer. And I was like, she's dating a window washer? And he's like, yeah. And then he blows it off and he goes, I've been playing cards with that guy for 30 years. Now I can't play cards with that guy. And I said, oh, good for her. Good for her, Dad. And he goes, why? I was like, Dad, move. Get out of the house.
And cheated. You cheated, yeah, Dad.
You're the guy. You're the dick in this.
Right.
You're the bad guy in this story. I'm so sorry. And then I find out that Bob the window washer owns a professional window washing company.
Oh.
He like all those giant skyscrapers.
Yes.
He's the guy who,
he owns the company. He's not washing the fucking windows, Elliot.
No, he's not a 75-year-old guy who climbs on a ladder and washes your windows. Okay.
So really, I mean, I think your mother did a lot of drugs. I mean, a lot of drinking. And
I don't know about drugs.
I don't know about drugs, but she was 33. She was on a Harley Davidson with her boyfriend.
Yep, Harold.
Harold, that's...
I feel for Harold. My brothers liked Harold, you know.
Really? Harold live with you before?
No, they were boyfriend, girlfriend, but my brother Phil's like, I think they were going to get married. I think that she was going to finally get a divorce, but she was Catholic.
Right.
My dad was Armenian, and it was 1969, and we didn't get a divorce, right?
Right. was Harold like a functioning adult? Or, I mean, would he have been able to support the kid?
I think so. He could afford a Harley Davidson in 1972, right? And they had never been cheap. So I think he had an okay job, but they were both super drunk.
Right.
So he was a big drinky drinkerson too. And they got in an alcohol-related accident where they flipped off an overpass onto the highway below and got run over. But he lived.
He lived.
But he was, I believe, in traction for the funeral. He did not make the funeral.
And so you were 7 years old and your mother is killed.
I had just turned eight.
Okay.
Corrected by any number of my because I do a joke about it. And both my dad and a couple of my brothers are like, you had just turned eight. She had just turned 34. And I was like, you know what I'm doing here? Stand-up comedy. Leave me alone. So I was like, the joke doesn't work if she's 34. The joke works if she's 33.
She's 33. So fuck you, and I could have my own truth.
Exactly.
Do you remember when they told you?
Oh, God. Here's the thing, is we didn't see my dad because my father didn't want to pay child support to my mom because she was not spending the money on us. She was just spending the money because she was 30, right? And she was partying like she had last resort kind of thing. And so my dad was giving money to my grandmother and all of my siblings were eating over there. So
How close was she?
Probably a mile and a half.
Oh,
so
right. Okay.
And my brother Phil used to cook for me. To this day, not a huge fan of buttered noodles. Because remember, I'm 5 years old, which makes me, I think, 12 or 13.
Right.
And so like Darla would get us all up for school. And Phil would cook. And then, and my brother Russ one time, he said, you know, Terry was 14 when they got separated. There was a leadership vacuum that he should have taken advantage of. He should have stepped up. And I said, he did take advantage of it. He was 14. He got laid. He did a lot of drugs. He enjoyed himself. He was 14. He gets to. And so my dad and the state trooper came the day after she died, right? After the accident.
But you knew she hadn't known yet. So
no,
that day, she just didn't come home. And you were like, oh, mom didn't come home.
Yeah, we didn't. I mean,
yeah.
So they come in. We're all sitting on the couch. We're in this room, the living room. And the TV was free. It had a bullet hole in the screen, Judy. This is like a scene out of a movie.
What?
But it still worked.
It worked and it had a bullet hole in the screen.
Yeah, just the screen had a bullet hole. It didn't hit the tube or anything. So you could watch television. Anyway.
Where was the hole? Was it in the middle, the right?
On the right. It was upper left, actually.
Upper left. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I needed that visual. Okay. It
would have been great if it would have been where that, you know, remember that, the boo.
Yes.
That would have been kind of great.
Yeah.
But so we're all sitting on the couch. And I'm sitting next to my brother, Russ, my dad, and the state trooper come in to tell me, to tell us all. And I turn to Russ. I'm like, who's the other guy? And Russ hits me and goes, that's dad, dummy. And I was like, oh.
No way.
Yeah. Didn't recognize him.
Hadn't seen him in how long?
Hadn't seen him in 3 years. I was four when they parted. Yeah. And Russ was the only one who saw him because Russ was essentially the mule of the money.
Right.
He would have lunch with my dad like once a week in Cudahy, the next town over. And then he would bring like a paper bag full of cash to my grandmother.
No way.
I guess. That's what I pictured.
Oh my God. I just want to hug you. Okay.
I know. I've done some reparenting.
Okay. So you're sitting there, your siblings freak out and you're like, wait, what? Like, cause you're so young, but yet you're not so young to not understand. So
the next, that's the one scene. I only remember, I have like four or five memories from this time. Right.
Of course.
From,
yeah.
Even like, I don't have any good memories of my mother, which is a pity.
Right.
Because there's absolutely no way that she wasn't a good person. Sometimes.
Right.
You know? And my oldest brothers actually have really good stories about her. But nobody ever mentioned her after she died.
That's so Jewish. Okay.
It's literally, they were like, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. So right. Nobody said anything. And I was like, but I don't get any information on this person.
Right.
And her family cut us off. So I didn't know, like my brother Scott would occasionally meet, I think, with our Uncle David, her brother, and I never met him. And I've never met any of them. I have a cousin named Ryan. It's weird. But then the next memory I have is of the funeral. And I remember there being a lot of shouting and yelling. And I've been told since that it was her family yelling at my dad and my brother, Terry, my oldest brother, Terry, yelling at my dad.
And why were they yelling at your dad?
Well, they assumed that it was right because it was his fault. But here's the other thing about it. My mother was not only a drinky drinkerson, she was also super violent. And she used to hit my dad a lot.
Wow.
And so there was absolutely no reason for him to stay, right? It would have been nice if he would have taken us with him. But in the end, you're like, well, he's 30, you know, if she's 30, he's 32, right? And so he ends up dating my stepmother and never telling her that he has 6 kids.
Right. I love that. And she comes in and, you know, you're living in chaos. You live for 8 years in just utter chaos.
Yes.
And, you know, in a way, thank God for your siblings, you know?
Yes, very much so.
I mean, you really.
I think my brother Terry and Philip, maybe Scott a little bit, got a childhood. And then I got a childhood.
Right.
And I got a childhood because of them.
Right. So they come in. Your stepmother comes in. She's Austrian.
She's not. Oh. The joke is that she's a great loss to the Austrian army.
But you said she had a lot of
Italian and Polish.
Okay. I see what you're saying, but I was thinking.
Yeah, yeah.
When you said that, I got the exact picture of structure. And she's 26 years old, which is how old your mother was when you were born. And here's a 26-year-old who is functioning, you know?
Right. And she's, I think, the fourth or fifth kid, 5 kids, Nancy Cation.
Oh, and really?
Yeah. So she had those 10 years from 16 to 26. Where she could grow up, you know?
Right.
And her parents were there for her. Her dad died when she was like 12 or 13, I think. But
it was like sort of the perfect fit, you know?
Well, she did the work, right?
Right.
She was like, she loved my dad so much that she was like, okay, I guess we're doing this now. And she never wanted kids. She used to tell us that a little too often, but she was like, well, there's going to be structure. You're going to learn how to clean the house and do your homework. And I'm going to make a boatload of food that isn't particularly good because she wasn't a good cook. She didn't like to do it. But in the end, you know, the childhood that I had, that second child that I had with her, that structure, really, like my grandmother used to talk about how she saved our lives. And in many ways, she did, you know? And like my brother Russ and my sister Darla are kind of the same person in the way that they were when they were born. They were like, they hate chaos.
Right.
And they both looked around and went, well, this has got to go. How do I get out of this? And so my brother Russ hung out almost exclusively with my grandmother during those years.
Right.
And saved his money, had a bike, like a little Norman Rockwell childhood that he created from movies that he insisted that he have from when he was about 8.
Wow.
He was like,
what does he do now?
He's an econ professor at the University of Wisconsin Whitewater.
Wow.
And he's essentially, he calls himself the hee-haw economist because he does a lot of Wisconsin, corn, ginseng, what the production in Wisconsin, how it affects the global economy.
Right.
Anyway, he has 2 children and he's a good person. Right.
But and he's a hands-on father.
Very much so. And he always wanted to be, Michael J. Fox, Alex P. Keaton.
Yeah.
He always wanted to be Alex P. Keaton. So he's always been a Republican. A Republican, the worst Republican. He hasn't voted Republican since before Obama.
Wow.
As he says, well, it's not like he's a liberal.
Right.
And you're like, stop talking. Just right. Tell me. And he always, and he is a button pusher, and he can be a jackass.
Right.
But he is always, he is incredibly philanthropic and incredibly, he's just, he'll stand up. He won't stand for any nonsense. He's like right. An old timey TV dad
right.
In his mind and in real life. Like he coached his sons played football in middle school, and he started coaching football in middle school. And much like your friends, he was like, why haven't I been doing this?
Right.
Years? Cause he loves it. And he still does it. Like they're in their early 20s now. And he coaches middle school. And he said that he was coaching this last season. And one of his kids, that his team was out on the field. They were playing another team in Milwaukee. And a kid runs off the field to him. And it's one of the kid is black. Right. And Russ is like, what's going on? Why'd you run off the field? He said, the kid opposing me just called me the N-word. And he said, what should I do? And Russ goes, punch him. You're not Jackie Robinson. You're not being paid to take this.
Right.
You're 12. You get to punch people now. And he's like, really? And he's like, yeah, there's absolutely no reason to stand for that. And so he sends him back out on the field. He calls his dad down from the stands. His dad's in the Air Force. And so his dad goes, what's happening? All of a sudden, there's a big scrum out in the field. And the kid's dad goes, what's happening? And Russ goes, the opposing kid called your son the N-word. And the dad is like, what? And so the referee heard it, punished Russ's team, my brother's team, 15 yards, and the kid for unsportsmanlike behavior, another 15 yards. So after the game, Russ lined his team up on the side of the thing and wouldn't let them shake hands with the other team. And so the head ref comes over and he goes, I'm going to kick you guys out of the league for unsportsmanlike behavior. And Russ goes, we can find a new league in about 4 minutes. You're going to fire that ref. And they said that they fired the ref. They might have just Catholic churched him, right? But so they go into the locker room, and Russ says to the rest of the team, he's like, how many of you guys heard what was said to our kid? And like three kids raise their hand. He goes, there's absolutely no reason you got to have his back. On the field, off the field, you gotta stand up. He could be obnoxious, but he's not he's not a bad person. He's such a good person.
Right.
I'm just happy to be related to him sometimes, you know?
You know, I had a
other times he's a dick. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, similar thing happened with Henry and baseball. I don't know if I've ever, Laura probably knows if I ever told the story, but Henry was playing baseball in the West Side Little League, and he was a catcher. Anyway, one of the kids called him a faggot. And my kids don't take that shit. And so
I'm shocked that you would raise your children to stand up for themselves.
God damn it. So Henry is like, don't you call me a faggot. I have two moms. My moms are lesbians. Don't you ever, whatever. And the coach from the other team came over and apologized, went back to his team, and came out to his team.
Oh, my God.
Bling!
That's why you do it.
Right!
So represent that
and you
safe.
Have to have each other's back. And you can't ignore this shit. Okay.
It doesn't make any sense to ignore it because it's not going away.
Right.
Hey, everyone. I love our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. I don't know if you've noticed when we show the clips of the podcast that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I'm just like, I love it. It makes me happy. and you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Cheese. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees, they have palm trees, they have evergreens, they have houseplants, and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York, okay? I don't even have a yard outside. And it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees. And whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information. And it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. Forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome.
Jackie, I have a question. It's a Judy question.
Okay.
Did you love Nancy Kashian?
Yes. And here's the thing about that is that...
That's the stepmother for the listeners, in case you...
Yeah. It's literally, I mean, Nancy Kashian... I have so much, she did things wrong, right? She was not perfect. And she was, you know, I mean, my older siblings had, you know, in some ways, Nancy took over Phil's job. She took over Darla's job. And my older brothers were feral, right? Like Terry and Phil and Scott, they had raised themselves.
Right.
And they're like, you're not going to tell me I have to be home at 5.
Right.
And she was super strict, and she was, and quite honestly, she was a little cold. So she was not, it wasn't lovey-dovey at all. She rarely told us that she loved us until...
It was tough love, yeah.
Until we were out of the house, and she's like, I love you kids so much. And you're like, you have never said that to us.
Right.
And so it was hard for anybody to really believe it.
Do you think that she thought if she told you that a lot, you would take advantage of her?
Well, she did have my father as an example. Probably. She probably thought that there would be even more expectations on her.
Right. Did you?
And she was already trying to fulfill so many things.
And you definitely felt a child's love for your mother, your biological mother, correct?
No.
You didn't?
No. No. Here's the thing is I barely knew her at all. And what I knew of her was violence.
Right.
So one of the biggest guilt trips of my life was not being sorry that she was dead.
Wow. That's fucking heavy.
It was heavy. When you're 12, wandering around, I used to walk. When Nancy came, she was like, you can go wherever you want in this town. You just got to be home by 5.
Right.
And then after dinner and you do dishes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you do dishes. And there was a chart, right? Some people washed, some people dried. If you washed, you had to sweep the floor. If you dried, you had to wipe down all the surfaces. And it was strict. Like Darla was in charge. If you washed, you had to take out the garbage. If you forgot, you had to take out the garbage the next day as well. And if you forgot, then it was exponential. So eventually Darla took out the garbage for the last 4 years she lived. And when the day she turned 18, she moved out. And I have to say
and
this.
And the place was full of garbage. Yeah.
Yeah. And this, you will find this interesting, how we found out that Darla was gay. Darla told me she was gay. And I was like, what does it mean? And she's like, I like women, Jackie. That's what I'm saying. I just want you to know, because it's going to come out in the paper. And I was like, what? And she said, I'm on the gay rights commission for the state of Wisconsin. with the governor. And she was 18, 19 years old. And
love her.
So I get a call from my Aunt Alice saying, that's just Darla being weirdly political, right? She's not really gay. And I was like, nope, think she's gay. And Nancy.
Alice Cation?
Alice Cation, my 95-year-old great aunt. Uh-huh. And she were a great cousin, but whatever. But the thing is, but Nancy and my dad, Nancy was like, we don't care that you're gay, Darla. We care that we have to find out through the paper.
Right.
And now we have to tell our, you know, everyone is like, is this true? And we're like, I guess she didn't tell us. And so, I mean, and the thing is there was a lack of, you know, my dad did the same thing he did with my mother. He gave Nancy the money and then it was it, right?
Right.
And he didn't care. So it was,
you know, but the thing is about all of this that is so compelling and fascinating is that your sister and brother were student body president.
Oh yeah.
You were the editor of the school newspaper.
Yep.
They grew up in chaos.
Yeah.
But there's had to be something.
It was the church and my grandmother. My dad's mom and the Armenian church and Nancy Cation. Literally, we would go. It was the church really saved my brother Russ a great deal. And then and we went every Sunday. One of my favorite stories is they got a new Sunday school teacher when I was about 9 or 10. And Darla and I were in Sunday school. And this woman was like more fire and brimstone evangelical.
Right.
And she was telling us how sin worked and how essentially she was trying to explain karma. Mm-hmm. And she was saying that it was instantaneous and that the devil would get you and you would break a leg. And Darla laughed in her face and told her to go to church instead of go to Sunday school. And Darla was like, she turned to me and she was like, you want to just go to church? And I said, all right, we'll go to church. So, because church in the Armenian church is 3.5 hours.
Oh my God. It's like the Jewish, the synagogue.
It's too long.
Like Saturday morning, you're there for three and a half, 9 to 12:30.
You know that Darla converted to Judaism.
I love you, Darla. She did. How come she converted?
Because her girlfriend, wife, partner, whatever, wanted kids. And the synagogue didn't care that they were lesbians. They cared that Darla wasn't Jewish.
Right. That you have Jewish home.
Yeah. And they have two kids and a boy and a girl.
What are their names?
Boy. Noah's the girl. She's 14. And Judah's 11.
Wait. So does she practice Judaism?
Oh, you know when somebody converts.
Yeah. Oh, they're the best Jews.
She's the best Jew. Yes, they're very good.
Darla, I love you. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom. She's coming tomorrow, actually.
Oh my God! Tell her I said hi. So, your father was a salesman.
Terry sells Jesus. Phil sells printing. Scott sells commodities. Darla's a financial advisor, and I sell jokes.
And you sell jokes, and you went to University of Wisconsin-Madison, which is an excellent school.
Better now than it was then, but it
well,
was
every school is.
Then.
Don't you think every school is better now than it was then? And not everyone went to college. I mean, this generation was the first generation of your family to go to college, right?
To finish high school.
Right. So the fact that these kids are all educated beyond high school.
Yeah. Russ was the first one. He was like, I'm going to college. And he talked to the advisor, like the guidance counselor
in
high school.
Counselor, yeah.
And he was like, I don't want to take shop. I want to take calc. And he was like, your family doesn't take calc. You guys take shop. And Russ goes, I'm taking calculus. I'm taking advanced English. I'm going to college. And Mr. Hansen was like, was it Hansen or Harris? What the hell was his name? It doesn't matter. He was okay. He's like, Jesus. All right. Well, watch you fail. And Russ did not fail. And he was the manager of the football team and he was great. And then Darla comes along and they want her to take home ec.
Oh, wait. Remember those fucking classes? Wait a minute. I remember. Do you remember this?
Yeah.
I wanted to take shop.
I wanted to take shop. Was not allowed.
Well, look. I've shown this before. When I bought this house. Okay. You see those?
Yeah.
Okay.
Where are they?
When I bought this house, my mother is like, I have a housewarming gift for you. These are candlesticks I made in seventh grade shop that she saved.
Oh my God, your mom made those?
No, I made them in seventh grade shop and she saved them.
Yay!
I hated home ec. I fucking hated that shit. I can't believe it. But it's so, I just find it fascinating. The level of, that they were individuals, that they, you know, they stuck up for themselves. They saw a better path. They didn't get stuck in this negativity that
I will say that my father is the author
they all
of
have
optimism.
Yeah.
My father is the author, I think, of all of my optimism in my life. The guy's glass half full. And literally will say, every day is a holiday, every meal is a feast, a day with Elliot is a good day. And you're like, all right. But he's not wrong. So.
Right. But it's also, and I came from negative everything. You can be happy now, but in 15 minutes, something horrible is going to happen. So do not rejoice. And that is exactly how I grew up. Like, you know, and it's from trauma. It's from previous trauma and previous generations. But it's like, don't allow yourself to feel good because, you know, tomorrow it's going to be shit.
Well, and the attitude that I was raised with is more of a, is like, things were horrible. They don't want you to be happy. Screw those guys.
Right.
And it was, you better be happy. You better figure out. And if you're not happy, pretend you're happy until
it's
you're happy.
It's just amazing because it's what every book says. Every book on success is basically be optimistic, be look at the, always look at the
Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with the one and only Jackie Cation. Just a doll. I loved spending time with her. Kill Me Now podcast with Judy Gold is produced by Laura Vogel. It is edited by Colin Schmeling. And my life would be nothing without Brittany Jo Sowards. If you like, I don't know why I say this every week, but since you like my podcast, can you please subscribe and leave a review? Please. It helps more people find it. Subscribe, tell your friends about the show. Please. I want to keep doing them because I love people's stories. Come see me. I will be in Aruba December 13, 15, 17. I will be at Stand Up New York on Christmas Day, or Christmas night of Christmas Day, on December 25th. And I will be in Carmel, Indiana at Feinstein's on January 15th. And various other places in between. So check me out on Twitter at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD. On Instagram at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD. On TikTok at Judy Gold, JEWDYGOLD. Because I'm a Jew! Listen, Hanukkah's over, but I hope everyone had a lovely Hanukkah. Please get vaccinated. If you're not vaccinated, there's something really wrong with you. Get boosted. Be safe over the holidays. Wear a mask. Just don't be around your fucking dumb relatives and friends who are fucking anti-science, okay? Just don't do it because they're fucking assholes. Anyway, that's all I have to say. I love you. And if you're still listening right now, I love you even more because I can't even imagine anyone listens till the end. And I love you. And as we always say, so long!